Welcome to the Sled Dog Podcast, Episode 2, Interview with Nooksack Racing. Hi, this is Tim, and welcome to the Sled Dog Podcast.
And this is Gina, and this is the podcast that inspires, informs, and instructs you about dog sledding.
Oh, I'm getting it. Three I's. Last week was three E's. Okay, good.
Well, I'm glad at least you knew how to spell that, Tim. Good job.
Nice. Hey, so welcome today. We've got a great show today. We've got an interview with Kathy Pickett from Nooksack Racing up in Maine. Her and her husband have a wonderful business that provides not only racing equipment, but also advice and just wonderful talent on how to prepare yourself for racing and dog sledding. So they have equipment and they have technologies that are designed not only for the beginners but also for the advanced folks. But today we're also going to be talking a little bit about the community-based podcast. And again, we talked a little bit about last week that the community-based podcast is focused around providing you guys content that you'd want to hear and also hearing from you. So getting content from the field. So if anybody wants to do any interviews out in the field and or bring us any content, or you have anything that you'd like us to share on the air, we'd love to bring it out to listening audience. Also, we want to do a quick shout-out to Heather Jamison and her husband. They live up in northern Michigan. Probably do an interview with her in the next couple of weeks or so because they do weight pull. They have won quite a few different classifications in weight pull for the dog weight pulls, and we'd love to hear about how they prepare and how they get ready for those and what they look for in dogs. But today we're going to be talking a little bit about some different stories that we have around skijuring.
Yeah, well, since it's our second episode, yeah, I wanted to talk about it because the second time that Tim attempted skijuring this year, he had a real fun time, and I really wanted him to share that. The first thing that's really neat is that we all race in our family. This year there's three of us racing with sleds. Next year there'll be four of us racing with sleds. But Tim has always kind of held back and helped get us to the chute, get our dogs ready, and he has not yet attempted to race on a sled. But this year he got inspired by another of our club members and decided to start skijuring. Tim's always been a skier. He's a great downhill skier and he's a good cross-country skier as well, so this seemed to make sense. Plus, he only needed two dogs, which would have helped out our population of dogs. So with that in mind, he had one race skijuring and he did well, and then the next race came about and he had a fun little experience. So I just wanted him to share that with you today.
Yeah, it was a pretty funny race. It was actually the second day of the first race that I ever participated in. And there were a few of us in the race, but what was kind of funny is the first day I got up to the race and they quickly told me that I needed to have a panic snap. And the panic snaps are designed, if you're not familiar with panic snaps, is that if you get hung up as a ski jumper and you're stuck in a tree or you fall down or something and you got to let your dogs go for some reason and try, instead of trying to undo your belt buckle or whatever you've got them held onto with, instead of getting rid of those, you can actually just pull on the panic snap and the panic snap will release your dogs. And for the safety of the dogs and for the safety of the musher, you've got to have one of those. So that night, I had my little plan together, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I could go out and, you know, buy the big skijuring equipment, which I probably should have done. But instead, I thought to myself, you know, I can make one of these. So got my little materials together. I had gotten some panic snaps from Nooksack Racing, matter of fact. And I thought, I can do this. So that night, I sat down and put some gang lines together and shortened one and put my panic snap on. And I'm feeling pretty good about myself the next day. So sure enough, it's the next day I'm in second place. And I get up in the chute, and I'm off. And they looked at my panic snap and said, hey, you're good to go? So sure enough, I head out to the race. And I'm out there, and I'm just working my tail off. And, you know, I don't know, you know, if anybody else has ski-jurned much out there, but it is an absolutely wonderful sport. But if you don't have really fast dogs, you're working a lot to try to win a race. So you're really using your muscles.
Well, and your really big person like Tim is, being a six-footer. So
yeah, big, and also I'm using the 1975 cross-country skis. You know, so it's I'm doing a lot of things that probably, you know, would look pretty funny to a lot of folks. So I'm out there, and I am just I'm just pushing my tail as much as I could. And one of the things that we have is we only have had last year, we didn't have enough dogs to have fresh dogs when I raced. So I'm using our best two dogs. Wonderful dogs. They know the trails. They're just great lead dogs. And so I'm going to use these two guys, Squirrel and Rimsky. And as we hook them up and we go, they're pretty excited because they ran maybe about an hour and a half earlier. They ran was it a 3 mile?
No.
Yeah, it was a 3 mile
race.
It was an over a 3 mile race for the 3 dog race earlier for my wife. And it was a great race and she did well. And so now these dogs are getting excited again. They're going to get to go again. Well, sure enough, I'm in the chute and I take off. Well, for ski jurors, especially for our class, the skiing is only about 2 miles. So it's a 1.9 or 2 mile race. So instead of, you know, just going the trails and doing great, my dogs decide at the very last turn, there's a choice between going G or going Ha. I'm supposed to go Ha. The 3 dog race earlier that was 3 miles is a G. So the dogs had already gone G once. So sure enough, we're coming up to this spot, and I'm not understanding, but my dogs do not want to Ha. They're just saying, you know, their minds are ready to go to the right. So I am pulling them, and they do not want to budge. They know the trail. They know where they're supposed to go. Even if they didn't think I did, they want to know, you know, they know where they're supposed to go. So I am just pulling on them, pulling on them. Well, I'm trying to not lose ground, right? I'm trying to get going, so I'm not thinking. So I reach up, and I start pulling on the line, trying to pull them to the Ha. You know, I'm a big guy. I can pull these just 2 dogs. Well, as I'm pulling, sure enough, what do? I pull on the panic snap, and shoop, there goes the dogs. So I'm standing there with my skis on, watching my 2 dogs start to go do the 3 mile run, and I panic. It was a hoot. So I am just now I'm in full throttle, just chasing after them, yelling at them, you know, whoa, whoa, you know, and just trying to get them to stop. And they've just got their heads down, being good dogs, and just running. Of course, I probably enjoyed it because there was no weight on the back, but it was a hoot. So sure enough, I went probably about another mile to try to catch them, and I finally just tuckered out because I was just going too fast or trying to go too fast. And I stop, and I see a snowmobile coming up to me, and I can just tell the guy's, you know, got some kind of a look on his face. He comes up and goes, "Lost your dogs, huh?" And I'm like, "Yes, did you find them?" And sure enough, they had about a half mile past me. So I jumped on the back of the snowmobile, rode away from where I was supposed to go, another half mile, hooked up to the dogs, and finished the race. So we ended up going about 3.5 miles. But it was a hoot. So I guess the moral of the story is know what and how to use your panic snaps, which is a kind of an interesting thing. So it's kind of funny.
And it was fun for us too, waiting for Tim. And I was hoping everything was okay. I kind of knew, you know, in my spirit that everything was okay. However, I was still happy to see him have a really good exercise that day.
And didn't
good
some,
run.
Didn't some of the one doggers that went out after
oh,
us?
Yeah.
They
oh,
came
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's coming back. And I kept saying, "Have you seen Tim? Have you seen Tim?"
Well,
so
it was a hoot. So anyways, that was my little lesson. So then I learned how to properly attach a panic snap so that by accident you don't actually release your panic snap. So it was pretty fun.
Not a good thing. Well, I'm really excited to learn more about what Nooksack Racing has for us today.
You know, Kathy has been just a huge help for us. We called her probably about, 2.5 or 3 years ago when we were first getting into dog sledding and racing. We didn't really know what we were doing. And I don't know if we know that much more now, but we really just had a lot of questions. And that's probably the reason why we started the podcast, too, was that if any knowledge that we have or others in the industry that like to share, if we can get that information out, it helps all the new people and also some of the advanced people fine-tune their skills. Well, we called Kathy, and she was just a blessing to us. She helped us many, many times. I'd call her and say, "Okay, Kathy, we're trying to measure for a harness. How do we do that?" Or, "Kathy, you know, what's the difference between the different materials for harnesses?" Or, you know, I'd say, you know, call her up all the time and say, "Kathy, what are your prices on this?" Because obviously financial issues were always in question when we were buying things like snaps and rope and so on. And I found that she always had some great deals. So we always made a point to go back to her because not only did she help us, but they just had a great attitude about what they were doing, and obviously competitive pricing, like most of the racing community does, or most of the good suppliers have. They're all fantastic folks, and they just love to help out. So it's a good, pretty good interview. It's about 23 minutes long.
Yep.
But she tells some stories and tells a little bit about herself and how they got into it, and I think you'll find it really helpful.
Yep. Enjoy.
Hey, so today we're interviewing Kathy Pickett from NooksackRacing.com. Kathy and her group are suppliers to the sled dog industry. And Kathy, as we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about your company and how you came about?
Okay. We started in 1976. We couldn't find equipment for our own dogs, and I had a background in industrial sewing. So we started making our own equipment, and pretty soon people says, wow, those are really nice harnesses. Can you make me some? And we just took it from there and ran with it.
How did the name come about?
It's from the Northwest Washington State. It's actually a tribe of Indians, the Nooksack tribe, and there's an area near Bellingham, Washington, that has the Nooksack River, the Nooksack Indian tribe, a Nooksack Mountain, and right across from Nooksack Mountain is Pickett Mountain.
Oh, that's funny.
And my husband is originally from Edmonds, Washington. So, and it means, it translates roughly men from the mountains.
Men from the mountains. And
great.
Yeah.
That is awesome. And
we've actually been endorsed by the Nooksack Native Tribe.
Oh, fantastic.
Well,
just because of the name?
I farm with them all the time.
Oh, that is great. Because of the name or because of the products or what?
They had saw the name, and one of the elders sent me an email. And at first I thought they were going to, you know, maybe be a little defensive about us using their name. But he was really great about it, and he was really happy that it was a company that was using something as natural as dog mushing.
That's wonderful, yeah.
So they were good with it. And he actually has a team of kids that race war canoes.
Oh,
so
wow.
We exchange racing stories.
Oh, that is hilarious. Yeah, that would definitely be an interesting sport to be in.
Yeah.
So how did you get into dog sledding?
Let's see. We had lived in Oregon and did a lot of backpacking with dogs, and I wanted to move back to Maine. And growing up, I had lived across the road from a person who had been in the Air Force at Elmendorf Air Force Base in Alaska, and he brought back two Siberians that had been patrol dogs.
Oh.
And they had been trained to pull a sled, and I always loved those dogs. So we wanted to do something other than the generic snowmobiling, cross-country skiing, et cetera. So we went out and got a dog team.
Oh, that's great. And now, do you still race, or do you still run them?
My husband and I have both retired, but my daughter and her husband and their son, who's 3 and a half, have taken over the actual kennel, and they are racing great guns.
Oh,
they go
great.
All over the world racing.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my.
Are they Siberians, or
No, they have Euro hounds and the pointer crosses.
Oh, wow. That is fantastic. So you're still involved quite heavily in the dog side, even
Oh,
though.
Yeah. I still train and stuff, and whenever they're gone away, we take care of the dogs and stuff.
Oh, great.
I do a lot of research on the pedigrees and stuff. And
so you're still in hot and heavy with the doggies. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, so hot and heavy that we sold our previous home, bought a new place right across the road from them, and we have 105 acres back here that's pretty much exclusively for the dogs.
And you've got the winding trails running through it, I'm sure.
Yep.
Which is good. Well, hey, tell us a little bit about your business. I know that you sell a lot over the internet, and you've got a web page and so forth, but what are some of the different things you sell, or tell us about the business itself?
Well, we're probably one of the first of the mushing companies to get into the dry land equipment pretty heavy. We make the trekking belts, canny cross belts, the bike jarring bayonet, which is a attachment for a bicycle to train dogs on. We sell a lot to Europe. We've had equipment and all the major dry land championships. We focus a lot of product on ski jarring.
Is that getting more and more popular these days?
Ski jarring has become very popular. It's a good entry-level sport for people that just want to get into it but don't want to have a lot of dogs.
Right.
And you can do it with just a couple of dogs. You don't have to have a huge expense. And it's really good for people that have a tendency to be more athletic than most dog mushers are, because to get into the skiing or the dry land sports, you have to be in fairly good shape, because you have to help the dogs a little more than you actually do in snow mushing.
Now, I noticed that you guys, and I've got into ski jarring last year, so I noticed that nobody's selling skis or anything. That they just rely on the ski shops and the local
Yeah, I think it's best to leave the skis to the professionals.
Good.
And plus, you most dog mushing companies don't want to have that kind of inventory tied up. You know, you're talking top-of-the-line cross-country skating skis are $400 a pair.
Right.
Boots are $300. Poles are $200.
Yep.
You know, so that would
be like costly. Me with, or you can be like me with the 1975 old cross-country skis still trying to go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, for the people that are into the competition and the racing, they have a tendency to go with the high-end stuff.
So what do you think some of the most common or the most, I guess, the best-selling products that you're selling, what do you think those are these days?
It definitely depends on the season. Right now, I'm selling a lot of bayonets, trekking belts.
And the bayonet, that's that polyurethane rod that attaches to a mountain bike? Okay.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, it was featured in Dog and Driver, and we sold quite a few of them, and it's you know, it has its pros and cons. A lot of people love it. A lot of people hate it.
Okay.
But it's like the Springer attachment. A lot of people like that. A lot of people wouldn't use it.
Right, I hear you.
So it's a matter of preference. My daughter uses one. My son-in-law doesn't.
Nice.
You know?
Well, that's good. At least you get you understand where it plays in and how people like to use it and so forth. So you can coach them a little bit.
And that's the thing with mushing equipment, it's all a matter of preference. No one thing is better than anything else. It depends on what that person sees into it.
Do you get a lot of phone calls from folks to coach them or ask, you know, they're asking you questions about this or how does this work? You know,
Okay. Yeah, definitely. And if people are in the area, they're free to stop by and spend some time and, you know, try things out and see if this is really what they want to do. Especially when, you know, we'll have a newbie call up and say, oh, I've got a chance to get 5 dogs. And they'll say, okay, now let's stop and really think about this.
Right.
Do you realize this is a 365-day-a-year commitment, 24 hours a day, 7
You don't just
days
put gas
week.
In it, right? There's a lot of
you
work
know,
to do with it.
Because it's not something people should get into lightly.
No.
It's not like a snow machine. You do not put it away in the summer.
Right. Absolutely.
Now, last season, 2007, what was your best-selling product then?
It's kind of hard to say. Harnesses, I do a big business in harnesses, but I also do a big business in ski jarring belts. I have a lot of ski shops that buy them.
Okay.
So I think those two items are probably overall throughout the year, they're probably the two biggest sellers.
Now, do you make your own harnesses, or do you buy them?
We make just about everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, except for the clips. Do you guys...
Yeah.
You guys...
Yeah, the hardware and stuff, you know, the rope. But we do make the gang lines and the ski German lines and the cable gang lines and the drop chains. And
do you make the collars? Because I know we get a lot
of
collars.
I make the collars.
And... Okay.
Okay.
Yep. I've had many, many offers from Chinese manufacturers wanting to make stuff for us.
Yeah.
And I will not sell out.
Oh, good.
I was displaced in my regular jobs by foreign imports, and I will shut the business before I sell out.
Well, don't do that. Just keep doing the same thing, and your prices have always been absolutely stellar for in as far as the competition goes. So as long as you can maintain that balance, we're all for it.
Well, thanks.
That's wonderful.
Just back up to your company a little bit. Your makeup, is it pretty much family run, or do you employ, or how does that work?
I have a person that does my dog booties, which she's not really employed because she works at home, and she just does it because she's my friend and she likes making dog booties.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Everybody.
She used to have a dog
passion.
Team, and she can't have dogs anymore.
Oh.
And this is her little way of still staying connected.
Sure.
And my husband does the lines and the bayonets. And
so he actually makes those?
Dogs. Huh?
Does he make the bayonets?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And he used to do dog sleds, but...
Well, when people buy the gear in the industry, or like whether they're new or so forth, what do you think some of the mistakes are that they're making when they're buying the gear?
One thing I have found, and it's they do not know how to fit harnesses.
Oh, it's hard.
And if they are willing to call and you can walk them through it, it's great. But if they just call up and say, this is what I need, I can tell when somebody calls me with a harness order, I can tell if their measurements sound really weird.
Right.
And I'll say, no, that's not going to work, you know.
Yeah.
I have personally measured well over 1,000 dogs.
Oh, wow.
So I have this set of measurements in my head that different breeds should fit into.
Well, and I imagine it's changed so much over time because it used to be just Siberians or Malamutes, and then
right,
it's changing, and now it's
right,
tiny. So, I mean, some of these harnesses are absolutely tiny.
Yeah, see, well, like right now, we're having to do a specialized harness for the Eurohounds and the Pointer Crosses because they don't fit well into a lot of the harness styles. So we've adapted a X-back split chest with a collared neck. It works really, really good on the Eurohounds and the Pointers because it has an open chest piece that their sternum can protrude through. And they're very deep-chested, so that piece has to be totally lengthened. And then it has a scapula plate running down the back of the neck that fits in between their shoulder blades.
Oh.
And on that particular breed of dog, those fit really, really well. But I would not even attempt to sell it to anybody that had Samoyeds, Siberians, Malamutes, because it's not designed for those kind of dogs.
No, and that's great to know that you've got them all, and you can either contact you or look on the webpage and figure out which one is the best.
Yeah, and I have to get some new photos up there and stuff as we add new items. My son-in-law, I sometimes have to prod him to, you know, do it a little quicker than he does.
Careful, I'm a son-in-law. Don't harp on son-in-laws too much.
No. I'm kidding. With kid gloves because it's all for free.
I hear you. Oh, you're getting what you paid for. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Well, is there, other than just your basic set of equipment gear, is there something special that you think really every musher should have?
Out of the ordinary stuff. Not just, you know, they've got to have a sled. They've got to have...
No, you know, really, I don't think, other than their typical equipment, I don't think there's anything you can live without.
Okay.
You know, I'm a horrible salesperson.
Nah.
But other than, you know, snow hook, sled, gang line, harnesses, you're good to go.
You don't need the $900 GPS unit and the global satellite phone and the...
No, because most of the time... The GPS doesn't give you a true reading because of the undulation of the hills and stuff. And there's nothing worse than going to, especially if you're in competition, of going to a race. The race organization has mapped out the course. They have done the mileage the best to their abilities, usually with a GPS and a combination of snow machine or groomer, whatever they put the trail in with. Combine those two and come up what they feel is an accurate mileage. Then you have some hotshot racer who has his GPS strapped to his arm with his Garmin 201 Forerunner and says, I found the trail only to be 3.7 miles instead of 4. Well, you know, the official time and the official mileage, this is what it is.
Right.
You know?
GPS unit at all.
So,
I think a lot of the devices are actually, they're nice. They make it handy for people, but they can be problematic.
Right. Oh, yeah. And, you know, sometimes technology can be left at home, you know?
Yeah.
This is one sport that you don't need to go too high tech.
Yeah. And it's too bad because, you know, dog mushing is still one of the purest sports out there.
Yes.
But even dog mushing has evolved to a level of, you know, they had to make a law on the Iditarod that you couldn't have a cell phone. You know,
right.
I mean.
Right, you can still pack a weapon, but you can't have a cell phone.
Yeah.
So you mentioned needing to change the harness a little bit because the sport has changed since you began in business. Is there anything else that you've had to change because the sport has evolved
into more? Just materials. The materials have evolved. Like when I first started making harnesses, there was a while there people were using cotton web. I got into the industry just at the end of the cotton webbing, which was god-awful stuff.
I mean,
it was horrible. The nylon started coming around, and it's the same nylon people use for mountain climbing equipment. And we used to use the fake fur for padding. Well, the fake fur was absolutely horrible, but people loved it because it was cushy and it was pretty, but it maintained water like crazy. Then pretty soon the polar fleece fabrics came out. They are still a really good all-around padding, but now you have the foams, you have the neoprenes and stuff. So the fabrics are, you know, constantly evolving. Same way with the nylons for the bags and stuff. Now you can, you know, they have water-repellent finishes, and right. they've made them much more durable, much more sun-resistant. So everything's always changing, not often a lot to the inexperienced eye, but to people that are in the industry, they'll say, oh, wow, look at this great new fabric, you know?
Right.
I get very excited about new fabrics.
No, that's, somebody's got to.
So. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
But we did just have a kind of a bad thing happen. Malden Mills has shut down their retail store, which sold rolled goods.
Oh.
And they would sell in lots of less than 5 full rolls, which for small manufacturers, 5 rolls of Polyfleece, there's a lot of Polyfleece.
Right.
Now, in order to buy, you have to go direct to their wholesale division, and they were bought out by some new people, too, so I don't know how easy they're going to be to do business with. Luckily, it's 2007, not 1987, and Malden Mills is not the only game in town anymore.
Right, there you go.
So,
well, that makes sense. You know, do you have a current passion with your business or the sport of sled dogging is or dog sledding? Is there a certain part of it that you just love? Do you love to go to the races? Do you love...
I like going to the races.
Do you?
I like the socialization of it.
That's wonderful.
I like just hanging out.
Now, which races do you like to go to? I know, is it the Can?
We do the sprint races.
Okay.
I really like going to the Laconia Sled Dog Derby in New Hampshire. That's just a really big race, and it has a lot of the big, you know, big name drivers and stuff that go. But it's just fun to catch up with. You know, we've been in it so long now. It's been 30 years. We've seen so many people come and go that the few of us that are still left, it's like, oh, my God, it's old home week. We can sit down and talk about things from, oh, my God, 30 years ago.
Oh, that's amazing.
You know, and it's funny because we'll get together with some of these people and we'll say, well, who are these people anyway? Where did they come from? When did they get started, you know?
Yeah.
And they have no idea who some of us are because they're so new into it. It's just, you know, it's like old home week when we get together with some of these people from across the country.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. So that's the part I like. And I like seeing the families involved in it.
That's
you know,
cool.
Like my daughter started racing when she was 5.
Okay.
She's 36 now. She dragged her husband, who is from Alaska, but was not the dog musher in the family. She dragged him kicking and screaming into the sport.
And is he loving it now?
Now their 3.5-year-old son is the one dog champion in Maine.
That's great.
I like to see the family involvement.
What's it like to mush in Maine? Just to...
Cold?
Yes.
Is Maine pretty rocky? Do I remember that right?
The trails are very technical.
Okay.
Extremely technical trails. We have a lot of up, a lot of down, and very, very little straight.
Okay.
We have a tendency to have icy trails.
Why is that?
We'll have good snow, but we get a lot of cold, so when it melts, it'll freeze again. So the trails can be very icy. The thing is, they say if you can, just like skiing, if you can ski in New England, you can ski anywhere. If you can mush in New England, you can mush anywhere.
Yeah.
The only thing people from here find, like if they go to Michigan, especially when they had Kalkaska,
right?
People from here would go to Kalkaska, and even though we had a really fast team here, because of the trail at Kalkaska usually being so hard and so fast that our dogs didn't really know how to handle it.
Right.
They were still waiting for those twists and turns,
right,
and the ups and the downs.
And there isn't any up here.
And there aren't any.
Not in Kalkaska, no.
We're about, I would say, about 30 miles south of Kalkaska, so that's right,
uh-huh,
in our backyard. So, yeah, that's definitely a different than what Maine would look like.
And
yeah,
for the folks listening, there is a race in Kalkaska every year, and I'm just trying to remember if it's in January or February, but if you look on the Sled Dog Central website, you can find out about that race. It's a pretty big race.
Yep,
yeah,
that's fantastic.
In fact, 2 years, not last year, but the year before, my daughter was headed out there, and I guess they got a call.
It was canceled.
Partway through New York, saying the race had been canceled.
Yeah, it's an early. It's an early in the year
home. And last year, what happened last year? Was it totally canceled last year?
I think so.
I think so too.
Yeah, I think they knew before they went.
Yeah.
So they went to Quebec instead.
Well, making that transition real quick a little bit, do you see a lot more of the dry land events popping up because of that and a lot more fall trainings? Okay.
Yeah. There's a whole thought process that we might as well prepare for dry lands because with global warming, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, if we're going to have a dog team, we might as well run them on ground. And we start our dry land events. Our first event is the 1st of October.
Wow.
And we'll go right through until we have snow.
Well, and you know, the technology has changed not only of the fabrics, but boy, some of the carts and the dry land equipment.
Oh, my God, yes.
You know.
I have a friend that's importing some from England, the Kudos carts. And those things are like racing machines.
Isn't it amazing? The Outlaws and all these other ones are just aerodynamic and comfortable and fast and strong and
high-end components.
High-end components.
The only problem is they're almost pricing themselves out of the market for the average person.
Right. Yes. I think so.
I agree.
You know, I mean, who has $3,200 for a dry land rig?
No, and you know, you think about a quad at that point, you know, or something, and you're like, wait a minute.
Exactly, which, you know, here we have to have. We have to have an ATV to train.
Yes.
And I'd rather sink the money into that than a rig that I'm going to use at a couple of races.
But if you're going to race, also, that's what you got to get, right? So,
but no, dry lands to the point that, actually, my daughter is organizing a race at Lake Placid Olympic site. For the end of October, that is going to be a big dry land event.
Yeah, we saw some promos on that.
Yeah, where can people listening find out more about that?
Actually, they're putting together the website right now, and it's going to be, I'm not sure of the exact thing, it's Run Dog Run, but it's DAWG. And I think if you click on that or Mushing USA, that might get you to it. But my son-in-law is working on the webpage this week.
Okay.
And they'll have all that information up there.
Well, wonderful. As soon as he gets it, let us know, and we'll put it on our show notes also for the show. Well, hey, thank you so much. This has absolutely been fantastic.
Okay.
Is there anything else you wanted to add? Anything else that you want to get out there?
Why don't you tell everybody your website address, too, just to make sure.
Okay. www.nooksack, NOOKSACK, racing.com.
Wonderful. And you've got all kinds of gear and pictures, and they can always give you a call, too, just in case they have
a
question.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you, Kathy. This has been just absolutely fantastic, and we wish you just a wonderful year, and keep on racing and keep on selling all that wonderful things that you sell.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Wow, what a great interview with Kathy, huh, Gene?
Yeah, that was great. It's great, great, great.
You know, it's really neat to see how she got into it and why she got into it, about they looking for equipment and really couldn't find anything back in the 70s and realized that there was one way she could get the equipment, and that was to do it herself. And so she started sewing her own harnesses and so forth. I think, you know, if we took a poll probably of all the businesses out there around this industry, I bet you we'd find the same thing. The people that have got into the sled manufacturing, maybe even the rigs and so forth.
It's clearly a passion, and that's what I like about it. Her passion, like she says, is fabric. She loves fabric and sewing and doing that, and so they're doing what they're supposed to do for this industry.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And the fact that she's now raising up a next generation and a next generation with the grandkids of running the dogs, I think that is wonderful, just keeping the sport alive. So we thank you so much for listening. Again, if you haven't checked out the website recently, head out there and leave us an email and or check out some of the different links we have. We've got some additional links to Mushing Magazine, to Sled Dogging, and some other folks that you can go check out.
Amazon.com?
Yeah, and we've got an Amazon.com link now. So if you do buy anything on Amazon, we'd greatly appreciate just clicking on the link. It doesn't cost you any more, but they actually give back a little bit of the proceeds. I think it's like a half of 1% or something like that, back to Sled Dog Podcast so that we can help support the podcast.
That's right.
So thank you so much, and have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
Be blessed. Yeah.